Hello and just welcome back you're ready. To the Retro Asylum. There's Mads. Can you hear him there in the background?
Hi, Chris.
I was just going to say, episode number nearly 300. Very nearly 300. What, you know what the listeners are asking themselves, don't you, Mads?
No.
What have they got planned for episode 300?
Yes.
Do we know?
I think the correct answer right now is absolutely nothing.
Absolutely nothing. Yes,
but it'll be there. It'll be there.
Yeah, of course it will. We're coming off the back of the epic 8-Bit Wars Christmas special. Merry Christmas, by the way, to all our listeners.
Merry Christmas.
This will probably have gone out, well, almost certainly will go out after Christmas. It isn't quite Christmas yet, as we record. I strongly suspect it will be in that liminal time between Christmas and New Year when you're listening to this. So I hope you all did well and got retro gaming related presents. You've had some downtime and a chance to enjoy family and friends and, of course, playing some retro games.
Yes.
How have you been, Mr. Christensen? What's new?
What's new? What's new is the, in my life for many weeks now, the 8-Bit Wars episode. And our listeners have just been listening to that. It's gone down really well. It's been nice. But man, I've been playing a lot, and I mean a lot, of 8-bit games. So yeah. As Steve would say, we had the 6 games and we had to play them on 3 platforms. So it was about 9 games we had to play with his Scouse Mathematics. But yes, 18 games covered. Lots and lots of firing up the mister, because that's the way I had to play it this time around. Even though I have all the real hardware, at the moment I don't have the space to put it out. So I've been playing
it
on the
makes mister. Life so easy, doesn't it, for that flipping between systems like that.
Yeah, and for the C64, the Speggy, and the CPC, the Amstrad CPC, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
So it just works.
Yeah, perfect.
So yep. Connected to the CRT and playing with one of those USB Comp Pro joysticks, it feels almost like the real thing.
Yeah, for sure. So you never want to see another 8-bit game?
Oh, I do. I do. I'm actually looking forward to to dive into even more Wars episodes at some point. Going back as the Immaculate Judge, that'll be good for me.
We're not going to reopen that can of worms.
Poor Steve. He was crying himself to sleep for days.
Steve is somewhere in Liverpool seething away even now, over a week later after the episode.
Yes.
Now, they are such good fun to be part of, aren't they? I mean, the playing the games is obviously fun, but what's fun if you're a combatant, if you're a participant and you're representing one of the platforms, just forming the arguments in your head, do you know, when you're playing the games about, right, well, how am I going to really champion my version, and how can I put down the other versions? And we did say it on the episode, and it's one of the things we always say. We love all of the systems. It's why we host this podcast.
Yes. Yeah,
we do. We love, well, you don't quite love the Speccy.
Oh, I do. I do. I just love teasing Dean about it. But I do love a lot of Speccy games.
But we love them all, don't we? But what's so much fun about? And I think because we love them all, I think we can formulate arguments of the pros and cons for all three of the systems, because we spend so much time with each of them. So it's really cool when you're playing the game and you're thinking, okay, all right, well, this runs a bit slow, but it's really colourful and it does this really well. And this one really doesn't look good, but it plays well. And you're thinking about what the other teams will put forward and what they're going to say. Steve wrote a whole speech, of course, around us putting down the C64 for being too brown, and we barely mentioned it throughout the whole thing, which you can get egg on your face, but it's great fun.
To be fair to Steve, you did mention it many, many, many times in our pre-recording chat. So he was just getting some ammunition ready. I totally get that.
Yeah, there was plenty of talk of Brown Beret and Greenbow Island, and all the usual stuff that comes out. But yeah, it was nice. And it felt like, well, certainly what I tried to do is talk more about what the Amstrad CPC does well rather than what the other systems don't do well.
Mm-hmm.
But then, of course, you've got to get down into the weeds, haven't you, with the old...
Of course.
You've got to get swinging with this stuff.
Got to kick some sand in the other faces, so yeah.
Yeah, it was great fun. And have you had the chance to play? You haven't really took part in any of our high school challenges so far this month. And
no, I've been quite busy though with life instead. So not much gaming going on these days. I've been playing actually when I've had 10 minutes here and there, a game that you said I should play, A Short Hike on the Steam Deck.
How are you finding that?
It's a nice little game. It's a beautiful art style, and it's, what is it right now? I've only been playing maybe an hour total. So
you must be over halfway through it.
I probably am, but it's good. It's light exploration, light puzzling or adventure or whatever you want to call it, and it's very nice. I like that.
I found it just a really nice game to play at the end of the day, just for half an hour.
Yeah.
Stick it on, find a couple of golden feathers, have a little wander around, meet some interesting little animal people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's been really good. Been playing that a little bit before going to bed. And then, well, I haven't actually played it for a couple of days now, but we are soon to be recording an episode of Playthrough where we are discussing Red Dead Redemption. So I've been playing that silly game for a while as well. GTA on horses. GTA on horses. That's all I'm going to say.
In 48 hours, we're going to be discussing that, aren't we? We're not going to be arguing about it.
Nah.
Yeah, it's the good thing about Playthrough is that I think we all come to these modern and middle-aged games from different angles. And it's one of Andy's favourite games of all time. Mm. So he's going to be right behind it. I can see you think it's a bit silly. I can see that it's silly. I feel a bit of a fool, actually, because when we introduced Red Dead Redemption, I said that it's a game that it's quite a serious game and takes itself quite seriously. I was very wrong about
yes,
that.
Yes, very, very wrong.
It had been 11 years since I'd last played it.
It is so silly. My my teen daughter, who played the second game, said that she was shocked to see how silly it was when she played the first game afterwards. So when a teenager even says that, oh man, this is just too silly. No, this game, I'll say that again, in a couple of days, is written for and by 15-year-old male teenagers. And
it certainly wasn't written by 15-year-olds, but that is for sure. Whether it was written for...
That would be their IQ level then, mate. Their IQ level.
Oof. Shots fired. Well, no. Tune into Playthrough if you want to hear
more. Yes, and I definitely don't hate it. It's actually a good game. It's fun to play. But, man, the narrative has let me down.
Yeah, it's like most AAA games, isn't it? There's so much there in terms of mechanics and systems.
Yep.
That you're probably going to find something that you like, and you're probably going to find a few things that you don't.
So I like riding my horse around that beautiful open world that they've created. That's good. I like that.
Except when you get stuck on jaggy cliff faces on your
horse. Yeah, actually almost never happened to me. Five, six times I've lost a horse for no reason. I mean, it just died on me. But once I actually died, and I think that maybe one of the only times I've died in this game because it's so damn easy, but I rode into the water. It was like shallow water. I would say like a feet deep, and then it said, and I was dead, and my horse was dead, and yes.
Yeah, there's a fair bit of jank, but you could say that. I mean, I haven't spent much time with GTA 5. I haven't really played it, but even... Rockstar games are famous for it, aren't they? Mm. Like, there's a good bit of jank. They don't really control that well. I spent about 2 minutes trying to walk through a door in Red Dead Redemption, literally trying to get my character through a doorway. I just could not get him through. Couldn't line it up right.
Okay. I haven't had that kind of problem, I think.
Blimey. But there's plenty of clunkiness in the controls.
Yeah. But I'd still say this is a game, if you like your open world and you like your Rockstar games, still worth playing these even today.
I mean, the production values are incredible. I mean, it looks amazing. Even playing it on whatever generation hardware it was, I'm playing it on original Xbox 360.
Mm.
It did get a 4K boost, so if you are playing it on Series X, it's going to be looking absolutely stunning.
Yes, I've been playing it on the Series X. It looks really good.
Yeah, so it got a 4K buff a couple of years ago. But I'm playing on original hardware, and it still looks absolutely amazing for a game that's almost 12 years old.
Mm. I love with the Series X that I can just pop in. It feels like any 360 game, and it just works. It upscales it nicely, and it's a really nice machine.
Microsoft, like most companies, do stuff that we don't like, but their backwards compatibility stuff is really, really good. Sony could definitely take some leaves out of their book, I think.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah.
What have I been up to, I hear you say?
Yes, what have you been up to, Chris?
So, like you've been playing a lot of 8-bit games, which was fun. I have been indulging in a little bit of Atari stuff. I've enjoyed playing Tempest 2000, which was our first high school challenge.
Mm.
And I didn't enjoy so much playing Crystal Castles. I want to say Crystal Chronicles. That's a Final Fantasy game.
Mm.
Crystal Castles, man, I bet you that's a good game if you've got a trackball.
I tried playing it once or twice on the Switch, and I actually liked it, but it's very, very hard to control because of the...
Oh, Jesus.
Emulating a trackball with a thumbstick was a bit painful.
Yeah, it was very, very frustrating. Many, many swear words. But I didn't really get very far with that. I didn't have too many goes. But the current one, and we're halfway through, is Bounty Bob Strikes Back on the Atari 800. What a game,
yes,
man.
I need to get into that. But when you're switching games this Friday already.
Yeah, we're just kind of doing one a week. So, I mean, there isn't really much time to properly get in.
The only time I would have to actually play games this week, I'm going to be recording podcasts with you, mate. So I probably won't get time to play Bounty Bob.
Check it out, though, mate. I mean, separate from the high score. It's not really a high score game. It is a high score game. But it's more of a kind of just getting through these amazing levels.
Mm.
It's a really, really nice puzzle platformer. You'd really like it, right up your street.
Cool.
Sequel to Mine of 2049, of course, which is a game that I think both of us, or I know I did, briefly checked out when we were playing Manic Miner, because that is the game that Manic Miner is heavily influenced by.
Yeah.
And it's an absolute beauty of a game.
Mm.
You would love it. I think if you fired it up, you'd really, really like it.
Yeah. I'll have to give it a look.
And then I've been playing some Shinobi on the cab.
Okay, yeah.
So this is inspired by... So Kane and Rince did an episode on Shinobi a few weeks back, on the original Shinobi.
So this is why you're talking about ninja games these days.
So, yeah, I'm quite into Shinobi. But there are lots of good ninja games, aren't there?
Yeah.
Last Ninja... Mystical Ninja, Shinobi.
Hmm?
They're good.
Strider.
Everyone wants it. Strider, of course, yeah. Everyone's got a ninja fantasy somewhere, haven't they?
I guess. How about bad dudes versus Dragon Ninja? Is that good then?
There's another one. BMX Ninja on the Speccy.
Yes. Never tried that one, though.
No.
Sounds good.
Don't try that one.
Hmm.
No. Two genres that should never be fused. Ninja Golf on the Lynx. That's good.
Hmm. Okay.
Isn't it? It's good. But yeah, Shinobi. So I'd never played a Shinobi game. But when I was listening to their episode, I thought, that actually sounds quite good. Hmm. I like the way you can... I like arcade games that you can learn. You know, where it's like Metal Slug.
Yeah.
Nothing's random. You can, if you spend long enough, you can get mastery at it and you can learn it.
Yeah.
I really like that in those run and gun games.
Yeah, me too.
So I've been hacking away a little bit. And also I realised I hadn't really played on my arcade cab for a little while.
So how are you doing with the throwing shurikens, the minigame?
I've done it once.
I love that in the arcade.
I've managed to finish it once.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I love that minigame in the arcade. That was so good.
It's quite good fun.
I've actually played Shinobi quite a bit in the arcade back in the day, but I haven't played it in many years now.
Have you ever played the Master System port?
Yes,
The original?
Yeah.
That's really good as well, I believe, isn't it?
It's quite good.
I've just put it on the Mister today. Again, I've never played it. Mm. I played Shadow Dancer on the Mega Drive back in the day. A mate of mine had it.
Yeah.
That was really good.
Mm.
So I've been playing quite a bit of that. I've probably played a good few hours of it. I can now reliably get to mission 3.
So best ninja game ever, by the way, if you don't know, is Mark of the Ninja. I think it's by Clay Entertainment. It's about 10 years old. It is a beauty of an action platformer. Mark of the Ninja. You need to check that out. An HD remaster or something along those lines was released 2-3 years ago. So,
is that Xbox 360 game or?
It was an... what was the arcade
PS3?
Thing?
PS3?
No, it was one of the Xbox 360. What was it called when they had those small indie games? The
Arcade Live thing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm sure it was one of those titles. But
Mark of
the Ninja. That was Game of the Year for me back when that came out. Brilliant game.
Okay. Hmm. Retro-ish?
10 years, so not really.
Dino Fires. Bony Dino Fires, if we start calling that retro.
Well, he probably will after the Wars episode anyway, so...
Yeah, that's it.
You're anything goes.
Well, I think we're back. Well, you're definitely on your last legs. I think I've probably got a couple of more strikes before I'm
Could be.
But I've been playing some modern games as well, but I'll save that. I'll save that for playthrough. But the retro stuff, definitely plenty of Atari. Oh, one last thing. I've mentioned on the Wars episode that I've been having a look at the Evercade community a little bit because the EXP is out and mine is due hopefully soon. I was just poking around their Discord and found their high score challenges.
Okay.
And they've just started one on Frog Bog on the Intellivision.
Okay.
Which is one of the weirdest games that you'll ever play.
Mm.
And they're having a high score challenge on that. And it's quite good because they set like these levels. So it's quite, even if you're rubbish, you can kind of compete at your own level. It's quite clever the way they do it.
Okay.
I have like these gold, silver, bronze and platinum levels.
Mm.
And so even if you're rubbish, you can compete at like bronze level.
Yeah.
Maybe we should steal it for the game club. I don't know. We'll chat offline. But it's quite good, quite clever the way they do it.
Okay.
But so I've been having a little mess around on Frogbog on the Evercade, it's such a weird little game. That is so random.
One weird game, yes.
So you've played it?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, got an Atari 2600 release as well, didn't it?
Hmm.
I couldn't even figure out which frog I was controlling. and the Evercade, obviously the way they've set the emulation up to simulate the Intellivision keypad because it had the numbered keypad. It's a bit fiddly to kind of change stuff.
Hmm.
It takes a bit of kind of working out. But once you've done it, I mean, it's one of those games where you think, this is rubbish. What am I doing? I'm just going left to right with this frog trying to catch these flies.
Yep.
And then half an hour later, you're still there pressing the one button trying to catch the flies. And you think, I've just wasted half an hour of my life that I'll never get back. But I'll just have one more go. It's quite compelling to play.
Mm.
And the way they set the high scores up is, yeah, it is really good. And I would urge people to check out the Discord and to check out Evercade, especially in light of the newly released EXP. I'm looking forward to getting my hands on that. And I think Mats might be getting one as well. Mind you, he's just got a Steam Deck, hasn't he?
Mm, yeah.
If we can find somebody else who's got one, then maybe we can get a review episode of Retro Asylum up at some point.
Yes.
Andy and Jim from Playthrough are definitely pre-order one, so
yep.
Maybe we can get them involved in that. Any news, mate? Anything caught your eye in the world of old video games?
Not in the past couple of days since we last recorded, no.
No, I can't think of anything either. I was racking my brains. It was news. No, I've not seen anything. There's nothing caught my. It's a bit of a quiet time, isn't it, for news? Because there's kind of a big run up at the end of November, early December of stuff.
Yes.
Being announced, and then it does go. There's probably loads of people saying, "No, you're not talking about this, and you're going to talk about that." But I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
So should we get into the game that we've been playing? I mean, we haven't even told people what this episode is about, have we?
No, we're just hoping people work it out.
Yeah, yeah.
Why don't you tell them what the episode is about?
So this is actually a Game Club episode, a very, very late Game Club episode, because in November, we were playing Whizball on the C64, yeah. And we haven't had the time to record since then. Actually, even today, we were just about to cancel this recording because we didn't think we could find the time for it, but here we are. So Whizball was a great game that we played for the entire month of November. And of course, yes, we need to cover that
we're talking about it.
Yes, yes. A sensible software game, and I do love sensible software. Probably my favorite software development or game development studio from back in the day.
It deserves an episode.
Yes, yes, definitely. Definitely. This is one of their weirder titles, even though the sequel to WizKid was probably weirder.
Probably.
Yet. But, yeah. I think Sensible Software always did this thing where they did a more mainstream game that would sell big, and then a weird one, and then a more mainstream game again, and then a weird one. They alternate like that, and they knew that's what they did on purpose, because they wanted a chance of doing those weird odd little experiments sometimes. And that's just how they worked for many, many years.
Yeah, they were very of their time, weren't they? The late 80s. What a time to be alive it must have been. Just such a hive of creativity.
Mm.
And some of those early games that they produced, I mean they produced the classics on the 16-bits, but you feel like they were at their most creative in the 8-bit days. I certainly feel like they were anyway. They hit the big commercial, the big commercial games really. They did that. Did well for them, but then unfortunately, it all came crashed down.
Innovative, even with their more mainstream games. I mean, a game like Megalomania, for example, is an early example of a really, really good real-time strategy game with a tech tree, which was there before Civilization came out and showed everybody how that was done. I won't say that Megalomania is in any way Civilization. It isn't, but it's a great game in its own right. And I mean, I've never played anything like Cannon Fodder. It was something unique, controlled with the mouse, and lots and lots of little tweaks you could do with different weapons and splitting your little platoons into different groups. And it was they did some great stuff. So
they just lost that slightly psychedelic, maybe too many hallucinogenic drugs.
Well, they still did that every other time, like with WizKid, for example, or Whistball, or Galaxy Birds.
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll as well was, when you hear John Hurt talk about.
Yeah, that was supposed to be a return to that kind of form.
Yes. Yeah, unfortunately, we'll never know, but it definitely felt like it was maybe harkening back to those kinds of days.
Yes,
The heady days of the late 80s.
Mm. But that was when they got into 3D and they didn't know how to handle that. So I think John Hurt says that himself. By the way, for all of listeners, if you have a chance of getting your hands on the book from Read Only Memories, I think it's just called Sensible Software, isn't it? That is a really, really good read. It's pretty much a huge interview with John Hare and some other people, but mostly a huge conversation with John Hare about the entire history of all of the games that Sensible made, and even a lot about Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll, which never happened.
Count yourself very lucky if you do have it as well, because it is now very expensive for those of us who weren't fortunate to pick it up first time round. Very expensive, to print for a long time.
They must do a rerun at some point.
Oh, I'd hope so. I think it would go like hotcakes, wouldn't it? It's famously expensive.
Yeah.
Before we go any further with this, shall we just thank our patrons?
Let's do that.
We didn't do that on the Wars episode, so it will be good for us to do it now. This list is up to date as at 2 days ago, December the 18th. There may well have been at least one new patron, judging from comments on Twitter, but this is the most up-to-date list we have, so this is the one we'll go with.
Yes.
Matt is seeking.
And I've got the list. And before we do shout out those guys, let me just again thank the original, the best, Chris O, and Jim, and Gordon as well from RGDS for joining us for that Christmas episode. That was great recording with those guys again.
Yeah. Have you recorded with Kingy before?
I don't think so, no. Actually. No.
He's a good guy, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a nice guy. Definitely.
I mean, Jim and Chris are obviously good guys as well, but I feel like I know them quite well. But yeah, recording with Gordon is, he's a really funny guy, really very witty.
Yeah, yeah.
And he just fitted in so well, didn't he, with our vibe.
I think we all just, we all just get along very, very well. So it's always just nice recording with a bunch of people, so...
I think with Retro Asylum and RGDS, though, there's a very similar kind of feel, isn't there? Relaxed kind of style. Yeah. And Chris O'Regan just comes right back into the fold every time.
He's never left.
It is literally like he's never left. And I think I would like Chris to be involved in the pod a little bit more, and I think he's up for it.
I think
Dean and Steve and Matt are up for having him involved as well.
Mm.
And there will always be the occasional crossover with the playthrough guys as well, so... I feel like we're in good shape going into 2023.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
Right, so, these patrons then. Shall I go first?
Yes. Go ahead, mate.
So, thank you and a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to Nick Smith.
Pete Rogers.
Hrunapi, as Mads would say.
Yes, of course. And New Game Old Flame, the podcast.
Yeah, they go from strength to strength. Very
yeah,
good.
Yeah, they're playing... What are they playing these days? That RPG for the C64,
Briley Witch Chronicles?
Yeah.
They are, yeah. Mm. Yep. Christopher Bolton.
Damon Crockett.
Dylan Darch.
Bitmap Soft.
Mike's Retro Tech.
Derek Young.
Dave Velociraptor.
Nick.
Howard Price.
Matthew Turner.
Cy EC.
Adam Hind.
The one and only Chris O'Regan.
Yes, there he is. James Dunn.
Hans Crombe.
Raushi MSX.
Gitto Threadbare.
Chris Atwell.
Harvey Watson.
Martin Jones.
Tim TJ Walker. I met him at the Revival thing a few weeks back. Revival, not Revival. Yeah, really nice guy. Yeah,
cool.
Good guy.
Ricardo Engel.
Heavy Metal Don, who's just taken my place on the high school board. The bastard.
James Bentley.
Tony Parkinson.
By the way, Heavy Metal Don, you still haven't sent me those CDs. Gaz H.
Mal Woods.
Kanan Rince.
Lampton Worm.
Salvio Calabrese.
Mitsuyama.
Riswin.
Clint Humphrey.
Mark Bullen, who we've got a very special announcement about just in a little while. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Stick with us.
Paul Ashton.
Chris Rowe.
John Shepherd.
Lawrence Giroux.
Deadlock.
Aaron Maupin.
Jim Orbitz IT.
John Veal.
Who is not taking my place on the high scoreboard, I will please to reveal.
Mm-hmm.
Thomas Goffin.
Andy Morris.
Patrick First.
Lauren.
Andrew Gilmore.
Stephen Stoddard.
Matt Sullivan.
Darren Coles.
Gary Heather.
Edward Fitzpatrick.
Nick Lees.
And Blake Brett. Thanks a lot, you guys. It means a lot for us.
Great stuff. Yeah. Great stuff. Yeah, appreciate that.
Mm.
Right. Whizball, then.
Whizball. So
we've already mentioned it was developed by Sensible Software, and it was released in 1987, published by the mighty Ocean Software.
Yes.
One of the final games they... What else did they do with Ocean? They WizKid... I'm sure Ocean published WizKid as well, didn't it?
I can't remember at all. WizKid is some years later on the 16-bit, so... I can't remember, mate.
I'm just trying to think. Was that the last? Because they didn't have a great deal of love for publishers, did they?
No.
I remember, I read one interview with John Herr where he was saying that, you know, he struggled to get money out of Ocean. But I think they did later do something with them just because Ocean were quite generous in terms of the money that they paid up front.
Mm.
Although with getting royalties, it was pretty difficult to get stuff out of them. It was released for, we're talking about the C64 version, but it was released for a wide variety of platforms. It did the usual 8-bits, and then it did get 16-bit releases as well. It also had a PC remake, one of those, I'm not a great fan, but one of those in a mid-2000 PC Windows remakes, which makes it look like a Flash game.
Okay.
I think takes away a lot of the charm.
For Whizball, of course, you need to play the C64 version because that was the original version. That's what they intended. The others are ports. Some of them done in-house, but the people working on Whizball for the C64 were Chris Yates, John Hare, and music by Martin Galway. These are the two founding fathers of Sensible Software there, doing the game and music by Martin Galway. So that's definitely the OG team. And that's the version you should be looking at.
Yeah, yeah. And like most of these, it feels like most of the Sensible Software games, it got its genesis with Chris Yates really just playing around, didn't it? You've probably read this in your in your book, mate. Chris Yates managed to get a ball bouncing routine, which she thought was pretty cool. I imagine these young coders saying, "Now, come and look at this. Come and look at this, John. Look what I can do." And he's got this ball bouncing around. It wasn't really doing much else, only that he thought it was really clever that if you push sideways on the controller, you generate spin on the ball, and the ball would then bounce depending on how fast how much you push the controller, and that obviously worked. That translated absolutely into whiz ball.
And that is kind of neat. I mean, I've never seen that in any games apart from this.
That's really
one.
Cool. Hmm? Yeah, I mean, that mechanic, we'll come back to it because it forms a key part of the gameplay. They'd also been playing quite a lot of shooters at the time. So they had this ball bouncing around. They were like, okay, well, what else can we do with it? We can't make a game just out of a ball bouncing around the screen. So I think John Herr had the idea because they'd been playing a lot of traditional shooters. They'd been playing a lot of Tempest, Space Harrier, also a lot of the likes of Salamander and Nemesis in the Gradius series. And they had this idea, okay, well, we've got this horizontal thing, we've got it bouncing around, what about if it could shoot? So they'd already done a shooter, they'd done Parallax, of course. This is a very different game, but they did have history with shooters. You play Parallax?
Yes, I have. They'd done Galaxy Birds at this point as well, hadn't they?
They'd just done Galaxy Birds as well. Mm. I think that was their previous release.
Yeah.
Although that was more of a, I think it was more of just a bit of a palate cleanser for them, wasn't it? Between big projects.
Yep.
So they had this Defender style shooter in the end with this ball bouncing around, and then you collect enough power ups. And you can stop the bouncing, and you create essentially a scrolling shooter. One thing that John Herr did add to the spinning, and I think makes a big difference, is he added the face to the green ball, which makes the ball look like a bit of a small overcooked sprout. But
yes,
what the face does do, it changes completely how you approach the ball bouncing bit, because I didn't realize this at first, but you quickly come to realize that the speed at which the face is rotating and the direction of its rotation is the amount by which your ball is going to travel when it hits the ground.
Yep.
So once you get familiar with the speed at which it rotates, and it can rotate, you can predict quite easily then where your ball is going to end up when it bounces.
Yeah.
And although the bouncing bit isn't, it's not meant to be easy to control, because they wanted it to be. They felt like it was punishment for losing a life.
Yes, yes. But you quite easily or quickly get to a point where you can control it. So we should probably say that in the beginning, you're a bouncing ball. And you can start by setting a spin to one to the right or the left side. And as Chris said, the faster you're spinning, the further you'll be moving. It'll set the angle that you'll be moving at. And as soon as you jump, you've lost your chance of controlling the ball. It won't be, you can't control anything until you touch ground again. And then it will just jump at the angle that you now set your spin to. And you can't jump back and forth, because you can't jump left and then set a right spin and then jump right and so on. But it's very hard to control. There are a number of pickups that you can do, or upgrades. I think there are 7 in this game, 7 or 8. Yeah. And the first two, I mean, you pick up items to upgrade. And in the first level, there are lots of monsters. When you shoot them, they have these upgrade items. And the upgrades cost 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, or 7 of these upgrade points. What are they, by the way? I mean, they're like
little
bubbles.
Strands of DNA. Yeah. That's what they look like to me.
Could be. The things you shoot, but I'm just thinking the thing that when you shoot those strands of DNA, they make like a bubble,
green orbs, don't they?
So you pick up those orbs, and if you pick up one and use that, then you get direct control over the ball while it's in the air as well. And if you pick up two and use that, all of a sudden you get full control of the ball. It stops and becomes more like a spaceship in a shooter. It's a spaceship that you have complete control over. It's not like a scrolling shooter where you just move up and down and bit back and forth.
Stay still.
Yes, you can stay completely still. So you've got complete control. But now, after only killing 3 monsters and picking up 3 power-ups, you can actually get full control. And Chris, I've been playing this game for 20 years, picking it up.
I suspect.
picking it up. Yeah, more than that, probably picking up, playing it for 5-10 minutes, getting frustrated.
Yeah,
it took me to the age of 45 before I figured out that you could actually control this damn thing by just picking up three power ups.
Do you know what though? The bouncy ball bit gets a lot of stick, and it is definitely worth saying that they did intend it to be, because unless you have power ups which start you, and we'll come on to how you get those in a sec. We always say that, we never do. Hmm. We may come on to talk about that in a sec. They wanted it to feel like when you lost a life, you, like in a lot of these shoot 'em ups, like Gradius and whatnot, you lost all your power ups. Subject to something we're going to say in a bit, you lost all your power ups. They wanted to feel like going back to that bouncy ball stage felt like a punishment for losing a life.
Yeah,
I actually got. I don't know. I mean, I went into this knowing what to expect because a lot has been talked about, you know, how difficult the bouncy ball bit is to control and how bad it is, I've heard some people say.
Yep.
I never really... Okay, yeah, at first, you know, until you get to grips with the spin and how you can control the spin of the bounce, I never really found it too bad.
You've got to be kidding me, mate. You've got to be kidding me.
I honestly didn't.
It's completely uncontrollable for me. Completely uncontrollable.
But you can control the bounce quite easily, though, right?
Yes, I mean, if you're very, very careful, you never set it to full speed, but just slightly edge your way through the screen,
yeah,
then it becomes doable. But, I mean, I just don't have the patience for it, so I would immediately be moving.
At the start.
No, I would immediately be moving too fast and go right into an enemy.
Yeah, and you will do that because you don't know what the enemies are off screen, right? So you don't know where they are.
No. Nope.
You're bouncing along, and if you go full tilt, you are likely to crash into one. Mm. But if you just, I mean, I seen that had like four speeds of like rotation.
Yeah,
and
it
if
could
you
be.
Just set it at the second one, it's quite a nice leisurely little bounce. You can stop it. Chances are you're not going to bump into anything. You shoot the. You shoot the whatever it is, the strand of DNA or whatever, it's pick up power up. The first power up then gives you like a thrust ability, doesn't it? It gives you the ability, doesn't stop the bouncing, but it gives you complete control over the bouncing ball.
Yep.
Which basically takes away the frustration.
Yes.
Because
although
you're not too mobile, you have complete control. And then the second power up, that takes away the bouncing. So you're then up. And I must say, I was thinking to myself, I don't really see what all the fuss is about here. Because, okay, it's a lot more fun when you are flying and you can shoot. But I didn't think it was too bad.
But you wouldn't be able to get anywhere. You wouldn't even be able to get out of a level if you were still bouncing. So you need full control, not unless you do
and you don't mean to, and then you're in a world of trouble if you end up going down to the second level.
Yes,
and you haven't stopped the bouncing because you're going to die.
Mm, yeah,
I tell you, I did get frustrated though. Like you get stuck on the scenery.
Yes,
don't you? Like
jumping back and forth between pipes yes.
And now that is, for, I mean, I did that right at the start. I did spend far too long because if you go to the edges of the levels, you tend to end up on bits then where you have to navigate your way through pipes.
Mm.
And especially on the first level, you can get stuck between the craters and the tubes.
Yes.
And that can get frustrating.
Mm.
The thing with this game is that it's got an inverse difficulty curve in a lot of ways, hasn't it?
Mm.
Like, until you get onto much later levels, when the enemies get more aggressive and it gets more difficult.
Yeah. I'd like to say about five levels in, then it starts ramping up. But the first four or five levels are really easy.
And you've probably been playing for a good hour and a half by then anyway.
Yep.
But until you get to that point, the game is never as difficult as it is when you press start.
Nope. Nope. Completely right.
Is it?
Nope. Nope. And that is probably where many people have left it, because they pressed start and they didn't have the original, so they would have read the manual first. So they wouldn't know that they needed to waggle their joystick like crazy to actually use the power-up and get to control this little ball. So and that's where I left that game many times throughout the years. So
it's almost a shame, isn't it? I mean, you think about the way games are designed today and how accessible they are. especially at the start, you know, that's all heavily tutorialized.
Yes.
And they spoon feed you the mechanics. You know, we see it as elegant now if games reveal themselves slowly by showing us, not telling us.
Yes.
You know, in Whizball, you get a little bit of instructions on the cassette inlay. You get your whiz tip screen if you leave the opening screen long enough, or you press space or something. I think you get the whiz tips.
That's true.
Which don't really make a lot of sense, to be honest, if you don't understand the game anyway. There must have been thousands of people who played this, thought, this is rubbish, I can't control the ball, the Zap reviewers don't know what they're talking about, I'm turning it off.
Yep, yep.
Crazy. It's crazy. I mean,
you really shouldn't, because there is a little gem of a game here, I think. So.
Yeah. So once you get into it and you do collect, there is a very important mechanic that we've not even mentioned yet. So once you do, you power yourself up. I think you get 8 free power-ups at the start. Once you've lost a life or at the start of the game, you get basically static enemies that are low-hanging fruit that you can destroy. You pick up the power-ups. And by the time you've collected those 8, you've stopped, it provided you've played your card right. You've stopped your bouncing. You've got control over your ball. You've probably got the Catalyte.
Yes.
Which
doesn't make sense for most people looking at it, but the little ball is actually the wizard. It's a wizard who turns himself into a little ball. And his cat...
Or is he inside the ball?
I think he turns himself into the ball. That's why you see his face.
Okay.
And his cat can also be turned into a little ball that just flies around with you. And you need that cat because the cat is used to, and this is where they've been eating too many mushrooms. The cat is used to pick up the colors that bleed out of some aliens when you shoot them. And you need to fill your cauldrons with different colors and mix them. And when they're all mixed, you go back into your little laboratory or whatever that is, your little hut, and you go through the level, because the level is then completed when you've found the color that matches that level in some way. And then the world is colored in, because initially when you play this game, it's in black and white, isn't it? So not only is it frustrating to begin with, hard to control, it also looks boring. Nice. Yes. Yeah. Everything is in black and white. But once you pick up the color that you need for a level and get it all colored in, it looks a lot nicer. It still looks very brown, but it is a C64, so let's not hold that against it.
I think the game looks really nice.
Yes,
I mean,
yes, agreed.
Okay, it looks very bland when you first fire it up, as you've said. I mean, if the bouncing ball wasn't enough to make you turn the game off, the drab color scheme may do as well.
Yep.
Again, the game's not—it's not exactly holding out its arms and saying, "Come and play me." It's making it very difficult to love. But once you do start to add some colour to the world, it's actually quite a lovely mechanic, because every time you fill up your, every time you match one of the colours, and you go to the laboratory and you know another colour's going to be there, it's really nice then to see how the world has changed.
Yes. Yeah.
And on each,
I was always looking forward to getting back in and seeing what's happened.
Yeah, and seeing how it looks different. And on each level, so the game, it's also worth saying as well, it's non-linear. So you have, at any time, you have 3 levels open to you at any one time. And you move up and down between the levels by going down various like chutes or craters or whatever. On each level, they're slightly different. So you can tackle any of those 3 levels that you have open to you in any order you want. They do get more difficult as you go on. So the further down, the higher up the number, the further down the screens you go, they get more difficult.
Yeah.
But it's quite cool, because you may have one of your colours. It may well be that you have to make the colour green. And green is one of the primary colours. There are green enemies on one of the levels. So you go, you shoot a load of green enemies, you fill up, and then you've filled up your green colour off to the bonus screen, off to the laboratory. Brilliant, you've put green into that level. On level 2, it may be purple. So you're like, okay, well, there's no green there, but there's red and blue enemies there. I'll go and destroy loads of them. I'll go and make the colour purple. Or it may be yellow, and you may find that you go down to a level and you've already got enough colours in your pots. So you may go into that and immediately you've completed the colour because although yep. You weren't even trying. And that's really cool. Mm. So once you start to fill up your pots with the different colours, you kind of progress through the levels pretty quickly. You'll find that you might do a couple in quick succession and then you might be completely drained of colours and you need to go back in and you need to shoot them. But that sense of progression is quite... It happens a lot because you're just filling up these colours and oftentimes you're not even trying to make the colours you're trying to make, you're just trying to gather the colours and they're just mixing themselves.
Yep.
And that's quite cool and giving the player like a sense of reward repeatedly over and over.
In the same way, sometimes it was frustrating because I wouldn't know where I was going, which call I should be trying to collect. And then I'd be surprised when I finally found my way into, because it can actually be quite hard to find the entrances to new levels sometimes. So finally you find an entrance to a new level and boop, it's done already. So it's like a double-edged sword because on one hand, it's funny to play around with the mechanic and mixing the colors and finding all of these things. But on the other hand, I'd like a more clear idea of progression and how I am progressing through the game. And that's kind of missing here in Wispball, I think.
Yeah, and the other way it could be frustrating as well. If you were trying to, say, make the colour yellow and you ended up on the wrong screen, the wrong inverted commas screen, you may have been really trying to save those colours to make the colour you were going for.
Mm.
But then it's just pushed you into making a different colour because you just happen to have enough of those colours that are required to make up the brown or the yellow or whatever.
Yeah.
But when you do and you put colour back into the world, it's always that colour. It's always you will see more yellow in there or you'll see more purple.
Yeah.
And it does the world. It does feel like the world is being filled with colour, and that's it's nice. It's quite a feel good.
It's quite a feel good thing.
But you can't do that unless you've got your little Catalyte.
No.
Which is...
So you need to hold down your fire button and then you get control of Catalyte instead. Of course, you lose control of Wispball, but he's continuously firing at least, so he should maybe be safe or defending himself.
Yeah. But so you can hide him as well. So you can hide the Wispball beneath the horizon.
Yes.
Where he can't be shot. He can still be hit by enemies, but he can't be shot.
Mm.
And you can essentially go and control your cat anywhere on that screen. He can't scroll the screen.
Yep.
But you can use the Catalyte then to attack enemies, which is pretty cool.
But you have to be careful because the Catalyte can easily be damaged as well. It takes a lot of shots.
Lives. Nine.
It's nine. Okay, it's nice. Yeah. I didn't know, actually. Okay.
Yeah.
But you can lose the cat, so you need to go back and find some power-ups and recall the cat with those three power-ups you need, I think.
Yeah, and that's a nightmare because they're not... Okay, I mean, on the lower levels, they are pretty easy to find, but it's not like at the start when you've lost a life and you've got the eight enemies there ready to be killed.
Oh.
If you haven't got those, you've just got to kill regular enemies.
Yes.
To find the power ups, and that can be easy or difficult. It depends on what level you're on. It gets more difficult.
I always found if you're the bouncing ball and you have waves of enemies, I'd be in trouble. If you had single enemies, I'd be able to manage them. But the waves of enemies was really hard.
How did you find the moment to moment shooting gameplay and the waves of enemies? Because each of the different kinds of enemies come in very specific kinds of waves.
Yeah. I liked it. It is a C64 shoot 'em up, so I'm not expecting too much. I mean, the C64 is a great machine and I love it, but it's not for me a shoot 'em up powerhouse in any way. I like to look at the 16 bits or the arcades for really good shmups. But for an 8-bit shoot 'em up, I really liked it. I liked the different waves. It was good fun. And especially once you get control, and sometimes when you get into a pickle, you'll misuse your cat to actually rapidly fire and shoot a lot of them. And it becomes quite addictive, actually. But at the same time, it becomes samey because each level has let's say 64 enemies, and there's a little counter that shows you how many enemies are left in the yeah. level. And once you killed all of them, and the counter goes down to zero, it just resets, and then you
just restock. Yeah.
Yes, you have 50 or 60 again, and
yeah, it's because they're your currency, aren't they? I mean, the enemies
within
64 is going to be 25. Paint drops that you can harvest.
Yes, and you can lose those paint drops, so you definitely need to be able to recall all of the enemies and start over, because you need to be standing on those or where those paint drops fall with the catch to actually pick them up. So, of course, they had to do it like this, but also when playing this game for, let's say, an hour and a half to just get, how long it would take me to get through the first five or six levels, it becomes samey. I mean, the shooting is not good enough to keep my interest for that long. Then I'll be playing it for other reasons. I mean, to try to color in the world and play around with the mixing the colors and so on. Yeah. And for those levels, you already said that this game isn't hard at all. So, I mean, if you just stay concentrated, you won't really die a lot in those early levels. And that means the game kind of, for me, gets boring before the action really starts.
Yeah.
And then when I got to the point where the action really started, I was wiped out in no time. Because once the enemies, you get to the parts where the enemies are actually aggressive and go after you, then I find that this, for me at least, I wasn't good enough. The controls let me down there. I couldn't move fast enough to evade them and so on. But I'm sure it's doable. I just wasn't good enough at the game for that.
Yeah, the paint drops start shooting at you at one point. I got that far.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it does get a lot harder.
Mm. So in the beginning, the paint drops don't do anything. They just fall down. You can't fly into them because that would kill you. But you can send Cat out and kill them and pick it up. But when the paint drops start shooting at you, you're in trouble because you can't move Wispball while you're collecting the paint. So you need to continuously let go of the button, so you're controlling Wispball instead and move out of the way. And that means you won't be picking up the paint drops. And that's where I lost. Well, I think my ability of playing this game wasn't good enough, and I lost my patience with it, really.
Yeah, you've got to be clever at where you hide Wispball. You've got to really...
Yeah, I think that's probably levels, it.
It doesn't really matter, because there isn't a lot that's really going to threaten you. And as you say, when you hold down the fire button to control Catalyze, it's constantly firing. So if you've got the power-up which gives you the multi-direction fire, the chances are you're going to kill anything that's going to come towards you.
Yeah, and if you get the power-up with the shield as well, you'll be safe, simply. So.
Yeah, that's one of the later ones, isn't it? Maybe the last one on the list.
The shield, I want to say it's number five, but... No, the last, you're right, it's the last one. No, that's not the one I'm thinking about. The last one is invincibility. I mean, you get a protective shield for Wiz and Cat for a short time where they're completely invincible. But there is it's actually the second one, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
You get a shield above and below. And then Yes, and then we have the multi-shoot that shoots in all directions as well. You're kind of safe there. You have to be. I mean, a direct shot will still kill you, but you have to be unlucky to be killed in those earlier levels. Yeah, I'd actually almost never use the full shield. Also, because there is this problem with the power-up system that it cycles. So if you have seven power-ups and you pick one up, then you're back to one. So how often would you be flying around with seven power-ups and just leaving it there? I wouldn't be doing that very often, so.
No, I mean, there were times when I knew that Catalyte didn't have many lives left. And the only way to really know that is there's no live counter for his nine lives. Mm. You've just got to gauge it from how many times you've heard him meow when he gets hit or gets shot. So there were times when, like, I'd be, because I think that's the Catalyte is the third power-up along.
Yep.
So there'd be times when I would pick up two and then just wait. And then I'd pick up another one when it didn't mean to. And I'd be like, oh, God. So then you'd have to use one so it resets so you could get back. Because knowing that Catalyte was was going to go, but that was my fault, not the game's fault.
Yeah.
The other power-ups, of course, come from the paint drops. So most of the time when you shoot the blobs of paint, they turn into little drops, which are the colours that you pick up, as we've already mentioned.
Yeah.
There are some special power paint drops that from time to time materialize. The best one is the bright silver one, which gives you an extra life, which is very cool. There are two ways. Can you get an extra life from points as well?
I don't know, actually. I can't
remember. Maybe you can. I can't remember. There are two main ways of getting extra lives, ignoring points, which you may or may not be able to get extra lives through points, is the silver drop, which gives you an extra whiz ball, which is cool. And also on the bonus screen, which we will talk about next, if you survive long enough, there are extra lives which come from that. But the other things that can come out of the paint drops, the good ones are the bonus whiz ball and the Indestructor Cat, which is the kind of light grey one, and I think just resets its life counter.
Okay.
I'm not sure whether it makes it completely invincible. I think it just resets its life counter. I could be wrong about that.
Yeah.
But
there was the black one as well.
Doesn't the black one just make everything go dark?
Yes, yes.
That's terrible.
For a long time. And that is so hard.
Until you die, isn't it?
Is it? Okay. It could be.
I think
I'd always die when that happened. So that makes sense. Yeah.
It was always until I died anyway, because it wouldn't take me long to die when. I'm just looking at what the C64 wiki says here. Freaky Bits, the black one's called.
Yeah, the black one turns most of the scenery black. Yeah,
turns all of the scenery, because you can't even see whether you're moving between levels at all. Can you even with that one?
I don't think I've tried that, actually, moving between levels when I have the black one.
Doesn't change anything, it's still black. Okay,
yeah. You're right, the Indestructible Cat, it gives Catalyte 128 lives. That's a lot.
That's going to last a reasonably long time.
Yes, yes, yes.
It'll probably last you more than your lives will last you. The other bad one, the worst one, oh, it's not the worst one, the black one's the worst one. Another bad one is the purple one, the mutant cat. Which makes Catalyte just go crazy. And it takes on a mind of its own and just goes all over the screen, losing its lives willy-nilly until he disappears because he's lost all of his lives, and then you're left without a Catalyte, which is not a good place to be. Nope. And then the light blue one is the Filth Raid. So there are two circumstances. It's called the Filth Raid is those blue spaceships which appear from time to time, accompanied by that musical sting.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether in Denmark, but it's not so much used now, but back in the 80s, a lot of people used to call the police the filth.
Okay.
It was like a slang term for the police. Pretty horrible, if you ask me. And I think John Hare's a little embarrassed about it now. But he was probably only 20, 21 when him and Chris Yates came up with this game. And to them, the police, you know, they were into their illegal substances, and the thought of a police raid was not good. So he brought in the Filth Raid into the game. The Filth Raid comes up whenever you catch one of these light blue drops. You know, it doesn't guarantee death, but they are a wave of fast moving spaceships which just need to be killed. The other time is if the game thinks that you're being too slow. So I took this as if you haven't killed anything for a little while. So, and that can happen if there's only one or two enemies left on a level and you're having to go backwards and forwards to find one. If you take too long, you'll get one of these filth raids and you'll have to destroy a load of these blue fast-moving ships. And you don't get anything for it other than having the joy of seeing them leave the screen. Not something that you want to pick up unless you can help it. And of course, I don't think there is anything in the game which tells you what they do. Or maybe there is on the whiz tips, but I don't think it goes into the detail of what a filth raid is. So you've just got to work these things out for yourself, really.
Yes.
What's a good thing and what's a bad thing. The bonus stages then, mate.
That's more of a free-form just shoot 'em up section, isn't it? You're in the you start in the middle of the screen and you're flying and there's no obstacles at all. It's just you and all the enemies, and then swarms and swarms of enemies come at you. meteors and all the different enemy types that you've seen will start attacking you, and you just need to stay alive for as long as possible.
It's a way, if you're point chasing, decent way to get a load of points, because you get points for killing the enemies, and then you get a bonus at the end. And also, if you survive for long enough,
you get a bonus at the end. Is there an end?
At the bonus stage.
Is there an end? Yeah. Can you actually kill everything and be done?
Yeah.
I was never good enough to do that.
Yeah. I only did it a couple of times. But yeah, you can get to the end of the bonus stage and you get a bonus for doing it. And I think you get an extra life for completing the bonus stage.
How long did you have to stay alive? I mean, I felt like I was playing this for minutes sometimes.
Yeah, 2 or 3 minutes.
Okay.
Two or three minutes.
Not good enough for that.
But you then get an extra life during the bonus stage, and I think you get one at the end as well. And then you get through to the laboratory then. So after the bonus stage, when you die or when you get to the end of the bonus stage, you get through to the laboratory where he mixes his colours. And then another important mechanic, you get to choose an upgrade.
Make it permanent.
To describe it, yeah. And if you're not choosing the thing that stops you bouncing around the screen, you're crazy.
Yes.
Because that's what you need to. So that will mean when you die, and you will die, when you die, you won't have to then go and collect something which gives you the anti-grav, stops you bouncing.
Nope. Definitely lock down the first icon twice so you get complete control once you die. Yep.
Mine one was always the first two. So you get those two locked in, and then I like to get the Catalyte guaranteed, because that's obviously, you can't play the game unless you've got that.
Nope. Yep.
And then it was the shields, the multi-direction fire, and then really it was, once you've got those locked in, then everything else really is just a bonus, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So I did the exact same thing.
But where the game, I think, falls down for me, and I think it's super, super playable, I really, really enjoyed it. And as I said, I didn't really understand all the heat that the bouncy bit got, because, you know, after the initial kind of few minutes of frustration, I actually didn't mind it. Where it fell down for me was it did get repetitive.
Yes.
I found it at one point, I think I was playing it for almost 2 hours. I ended up with 7 or 8 lives. And I just had to turn it off because I just got bored. That was before I really got to the hard stuff. And as you say, the difficulty does ramp up a lot.
But you've got to
play it for a long time to get there. And I just think most players they're probably not going to do that.
Nope, I'd say you're right. I had the same experience. I enjoyed it, played it initially for the gameplay, for the shoot 'em up and for exploring the levels, but later on it became very samey, and I was good enough at it so that those first four or five levels weren't so hard. So it was just to see the world, see what happens when I'd color it in. And then all of a sudden the difficulty just ramps up so quickly that I couldn't control it anymore. And then I died, and I felt like I'd seen enough. I actually didn't want to go back in. It's going to be some time before I turn on Whistball again. I probably will some years down the line, see if I can get further. But this is enough for me for now.
I think, was it Pix? It probably was Pix, to be fair. Pix played it, looped it, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he's probably played the game totally for 20 minutes and he looped it. So, of course he did. But
he said it took him hours to do it.
Okay.
Yeah, and he said you got nothing for filling up every colour to do it. I think there's 9 levels. So yes. For filling
8
up,
levels, I think. But
8 levels. So for filling up the 3 colours on all 8 levels, that's 24 visits to the laboratory. It just loops back to the start.
Okay.
So you don't get any end scene, nothing. It just starts again. And as soon as I found that out, it kind of took all my motivation really away from playing it to completion.
Yeah.
It's not really a high score chaser either, because it's more of a grindy, how long can you last kind of game, and the fun and the mechanics of filling up the colours in the world.
Hmm.
I didn't really feel like there was ever going to be a high score challenge in there, did you?
No, not at all.
Didn't feel like that kind of game. And once you know that there's no real incentive to finish it, and you know that the gameplay doesn't really change other than it getting a bit more challenging, you then start to think, well, why? What am I doing? Why? I've seen enough of it. I'm enjoying it because the gameplay's fun, but I didn't really have the motivation to play it any longer.
Hmm.
I really enjoyed what I did play, but it just lacks that. A little bit of variety and a little bit of giving me a reward, more of a reward as the game goes on for playing it more. Maybe it could give me a new power-up, I don't know, or a slightly new mechanic. Maybe if it was a 16-bit game, that's what it would have done. But obviously they were struggling with memory limitations and whatnot here.
Yeah.
Music deserves a mention, mate. Martin Galway's incredible music. That title screen music is absolutely stunning. Many, many times I fired up the C64 while I was working, and just for 10 minutes, just let the track loop. I think it's about a 4-minute loop, a couple of parts to the track. It's one of, to my mind, one of my favourite C64 tracks that I've certainly heard. Quite rightly gets a lot of kudos.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, the other musical stings that you hear, there's a really nice high score track, which again, I think was a Martin Galway track. You get the Game Over guitar lick. That was Chris Yates, apparently, playing that on his guitar. And Martin Galway transposed it.
Yeah.
And then when the filth ray comes on, you get that kind of heavy while the blue enemies. But the soundscape is superb in the game. Like the sound of the shooting from the whiz ball, like Catalyte's meowing sound.
Mm.
It's a really unique and recognisable soundscape, this game. I can't think of another game. I mean, if you could now, I reckon in 10 years, you could, if I heard whiz ball, I'd be like, right, that's whiz ball. Can only be whiz ball. No other game sounds like that. It's a very recognisable soundscape that they created. It's very, very cool. What else have I got here on my list to talk about? WizKid
was yes.
The sequel. I played WizKid back in the day. It's a different game.
Yes, completely.
But it has a bonus level, I think, or a bit of gameplay which harkens back to Whiz Ball.
Mm.
Is it better?
I enjoyed WizKid a lot more than I enjoyed Whiz Ball, but I played WizKid a lot on my Amiga, so maybe that's just nostalgia. I haven't played WizKid in many years, so I should pick it up again. But
One that we could go back to one day, I think. Mm. Yeah. So it was on the shortlist, wasn't it, when we had Sensible Soccer last year?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. So it is a sequel, of course, to Whiz Ball, and it is still the wizard and his cat, who's got a name now. He's called Nifta. But
that's right, yeah.
Yes. But now they've restored the colors to the world. I guess something went wrong anyway, so now they need to to go save the world once more.
And why not?
Yeah.
Why the devil not? I definitely played it back. It's more of a musical thing, isn't it? You've got to find musical notes, I think, if I remember correctly.
There are different mini games in there, isn't there? There's something that's like a Breakout clone, and there's something that's... Yeah. I mean, I seem to remember the cat, or maybe Whiz Ball directing music as well. And, yeah,
that rings a bell.
Yeah, and a shoot-em-up section. And
there's definitely a Whiz Ball type section as well. Yes, isn't there? One which yeah.
And some puzzle as well, I think. But I forget. And I played this a lot back in the day, so I should definitely get into it again.
Yeah, we should. It'd be a fun one to cover in the game club, actually, as well.
Yeah,
because it's got that variety of different. It probably has what Whiz Ball doesn't have, in that Whiz Ball is a really, really good one or two trick pony. I think what it does really, really well. I love the mechanic of filling up the world with color. I like the moment-to-moment shooting. But once you've seen that, that's all there is to see. Whereas WizKid sounds like it's got a little bit more variety.
Mm. So WizKid was actually still published by Ocean. We talked about that in the beginning. And it's the same team. I mean, the programmed by Chris Yates and John Harris, the artist, and this time just RJ, Richard Joseph, instead, on the music, instead of Martin Galway. Yeah.
I'm just looking on Moby Games here as well. Gary Bracey gets a credit, who was one of the business guys at Ocean, wasn't he?
He's credited as being the end of level boss.
It doesn't say the end of level boss designer. He just is the end of level boss, which is which is brilliant. I mean, Sensible was sorely missed when they disappeared off the scene in the mid to late 90s. They were sorely missed. And it was games like this, the creativity. I mean, it got absolutely... The magazines of the day absolutely love this.
Yeah.
This Whizball. And it comes up quite frequently. If you look at lists of best C64 games, it's usually... If not first, then it's around the first. I mean, Zap gave it 98 in July 1987.
Yeah, that's impressive. Yeah,
they can't have given many games higher than that.
Sensible were the darlings of the press, weren't they?
Yeah, well, they did. I mean,
they did good stuff. I mean, Shoot 'em Up Construction Kit. I don't know how many games I've played made in Shoot 'em Up Construction Kit, which Sensible Software did, by the way. Yeah. And Megalomania, Cannon Fodder, Sensible Soccer, some of my all-time favorite games. So, yeah, it's they did some great, great stuff.
And then they just disappeared.
Yes, sadly.
It is so sad. I mean,
disappeared while trying to get... The development of sex, drugs, and rock and roll under control, I think.
Sensible Golf was their last unique game in 1995.
Okay.
You know, if any developer was taken too young, it was them, wasn't it? Mm. You know, surely there was more potential, but they just didn't. They couldn't scale up.
Nope.
For the 3D, for the coming of 3D, and it just took them. It took them out. Yep. Really, the changing tastes of the time took them out.
Mm.
John Hare's tried, hasn't he? He's tried to get back in over the years. Matt Wilshire did a great interview with him in the early days of Retro Asylum. And if you've not listened to that, listeners, and you want to know more about John, John's a very open guy. And I've heard him being interviewed a couple of times. And he's, you know, he doesn't hold back. He's good value. Matt did a really good interview with him.
Yep.
He tried to get back into mobile development, you know, in small teams and one-man team stuff. And it, like a lot of... coders who tried to go back to it on those kind of platforms just never quite worked out.
He's been trying to do the spiritual successor to Sensible Soccer for the longest time, and I think it's out on some platforms, right? The Sociable Soccer game.
I mean I've never played it.
Okay.
I just feel like the moment's gone for that, you know. I don't know. I mean, I enjoyed going back when we went back to Sensi Soccer last December. This time last year, we were playing Sensible Soccer.
Yeah.
I can't believe that was a year ago. But when we were talking about that, I enjoyed playing that. Really enjoyed playing that for a month. But it didn't make me want to go and seek out Sociable Soccer.
See, for some reason, even though I did enjoy Sensible Soccer back in the day, I didn't enjoy revisiting it because it's solely a multiplayer game for me. I find no joy in playing the single player at all. But Sociable Soccer, which I would be able to play online against a couple of people, that would actually be good fun, I think.
Maybe it would be. I mean, maybe it's something that we should check out. I think we definitely have a community of people to play with.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and he's got a track record. If anyone can do it, it'd be John Hare. Oh, just speaking of multiplayer, just back to Whizball. Did you ever play it in multiplayer back in the day or
no, recently? No. I really want to try that. I've never tried it. So
it'd be really cool.
You can play it in different ways, but the most interesting way is that one player gets control over Whizball and another player controls the cat, Calite.
Yeah. The other way is obviously just more straightforward, two-player alternating in a more typical way. But that two-player simultaneous where you can... where one controls Catalyte and one controls Whizball sounds like it would be great fun.
Yep.
If you could get a mate round who was into it as well. That'd be good fun. Maybe so that's where the longevity comes.
Yeah, could be. For the John Hare and Sensible Soccer fans, I just looked up Sociable Soccer. It is coming for PC and console in 2023, it says. It's been out since 2019 on Apple Arcade. So that's probably, they made a deal with Apple Arcade, I guess, when that launched.
So it's out next year then?
For it says here it's out next year for PC and console. Yep.
Ah, well, there we go. We'll keep tabs on that. We'll keep people posted. Because it would be fun to give that a go when it comes to PC. And if it comes to Switch, that seems like it's a perfect platform for it.
It says so here. It's going to be made available by somebody called KPL globally for the Switch, PlayStation 4 and 5, and Xbox Series X and S. And, of course, a Steam release.
Watch this space.
Yeah, that'd be good fun.
Sociable Soccer on the Steam Deck.
Mm.
Oh, speaking of the Steam Deck, I had this brainwave playing Whizball that I would try and use save states to try and get through and loop it. And I thought, well, I can use save states. That would be great. You know, I can break it up. The one thing that using a D-pad as opposed to a joystick makes very difficult is the waggle to activate the power-ups.
Yeah, exactly.
Is less... far less easy on a D-pad. I mean, you can do it, but you can do it, but it's not easy. And in the heat of battle, when you're trying to activate your power-up and you're having to waggle the D-pad, normally results in the loss of a life, which gets very frustrating. And that
I'd say even with a joystick in hand, that mechanic would sometimes mean that I lost a life.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it's quite an elegant way to use one fire button, though, isn't it? The waggle to activate the power-up, as opposed to, like, reaching out and pressing spacebar.
So calling that elegant is probably blatant fanboyism, isn't it? It's because you're okay with a one button joystick. It's a limitation. It's a way to work around a limitation, a stupid limitation. And what I would probably have done as a developer... I would have used a spacebar.
See, that's the alternative.
Mm.
Yeah. I quite like the fact that you don't have to use the spacebar, though, and I think it's a pretty cool way to implement it. You've got to do it one way or the other.
Yes, true. I thought it was cumbersome. I didn't like having to waggle the joystick to apply a power-up, and it would kill me a few times.
Yeah, you have got to be very careful. Mm. Any closing thoughts on Whizball, then, mate?
No, I think it's covered pretty well, isn't it? It's a game
glad,
I think
I'm glad
was
we've done this.
Yeah, me too. I'm glad that I finally found out what was there, and I did enjoy playing it, so it was good fun.
Yeah, I'm certainly glad. I mean, it's one of those sacred cows for a lot of people, Whizball, isn't it? I always felt like it was a game and black hole of mine that I needed to play it, because so many people say it's one of these great C64 games. Yep, so I'm glad I've ticked it off. I'll always be able to talk about it. It's probably not one that I'll go back to all that often. I wouldn't. If someone was playing Whizball was on a revival, and it was like, I'd sit down and give it a go for 15 minutes. Mm. But I don't think it's one that I'll fire up too many more times. But I'll always think of it as a really playable, really great game. And I can guarantee you that we won't be featuring it on future 8-bit wars, because it's not great on the CPC.
Okay.
I didn't think so anyway. It's too slow.
Mm.
Genuinely too slow.
Okay.
C64 is the only place to play this game, for sure. There we go.
Yes. Big announcement time.
Go for it.
Yes. So going forward, we're making some changes to the Game Club. The Game Club format, I guess, bringing in some new fresh eyes and some hands to play, actually hold the joysticks and play the games with us. So we've asked Mark, as you know, or Kit from the Discord forums, to help us and then step in as a more permanent guest host on the Game Club episodes. And he will be leading the first month of 2023, January. He's going to be picking some games for us. And of course, he'll be there on the recording and talking about the different games. So you and I are going to be alternating a bit, recording with I'll be on some episodes with Mark, and you'll be on some, and we'll do some together as we usually do. Yeah. But that means you and I will only be recording Game Club episodes together 4 times a year, I guess, if we alternate like that. But that would also mean that we get some time, hopefully, to do some more episodes of the Retro Asylum that aren't just Game Club episodes. And we've been wanting to do that for quite a while. So,
yeah, I mean, we've been doing this for 4 years.
Yep.
Month in, month out. Yeah, we barely missed a month. I think, you know, we both felt like it's needed a little bit of fresh impetus. We've maybe lost a bit of steam in the last 12 months on it. Various reasons. Mm. But I think having someone fresh and Mark's US perspective as well.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that.
Serve as well. And I think it'll just freshen it up. And I think we'll vibe off him as well, off his coming in and his enthusiasm to keep it going. So I think it's a good move, and I'm looking forward to recording with him.
Yeah, and we haven't actually told Mark yet, but he's going to be solely in charge of picking the games for January, so we'll definitely get a true Mark month there.
Yeah, yeah, and again, I think we can announce a theme here, can't we? I think there's no reason why we can't.
It's so going to be. We think that the theme is going to be 8-bit racers, right?
Yeah, NES racers.
NES racers, yes.
So NES racers, so the likes of RC Pro-Am, Rad Racer. Mm. Those kind of micro machines, possibly as well. What we're going to ask Mark, because we
have to find some Knight Rider games as well for that theme, I think.
I think I think he's got a Knight Rider episode lined up with DMC.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Or one of those Knight Rider games that is worth playing. Mm. But he so what we're going to ask him to do, because it's Christmas is coming up and we're running out of time to do a traditional shortlist episode, we're going to ask Mark to put his four choices for the shortlist in Discord. So if you're not in Discord, you listen to this, you want to get involved, come and join us. It'll be in the Game Club channel. And then we'll run a poll towards the end of the month based on Mark's four choices. He doesn't know any of this yet, but he will know by the time this goes out. And then that'll be the game for January. And then what we're going to really try and do is get back into that regular shortlist episode, full Game Club episode. Look to get them out for on the start of the month or shortly afterwards.
Yes,
and it's good. I think it'll breathe fresh life into the Game Club, because it's something that we want to keep going. We just need a little bit of fresh impetus.
Mm, definitely. So looking forward to bringing Mark in.
And don't forget about the community playthrough. I can't believe I didn't mention Super Metroid at the start. We're just coming to the end of Super Metroid month. I'd never played Super Metroid. It's now one of my favourite games of all time. Comfortably in the top 5 of my favourite games. I adore Super Metroid. And I'm not going to give it the injustice of just talking about it here for 10 seconds. I'd love to do an episode with you, mate, or anybody who wants to give me someone to bounce my waxed lyrical of Super Metroid against. I would love to do that in the new year. It's a wonderful game, in my opinion.
Did you get to see Shimmers in her bikini?
No way. I'm dead. I'm really slow.
Okay.
So I took way too long, and I'm not gonna be someone who just finds ways to speedrun it. I love the atmosphere. I love the design. I mean, it is. You know, I really enjoyed it when we played Metroid Prime, but there was bits of Metroid Prime that I didn't really get on with, a lot of the combat, some of the boss battles. Okay. Whereas Super Metroid just felt perfect to me. I mean, that I don't think it's a perfect game, but in terms of what I was looking for from a Metroid game, it felt like the atmosphere of Metroid Prime, but without any of the bits I found annoying.
Mm.
Oh, mate, I absolutely loved every single second with it.
Did you ever play Axiom Verge, mate?
No, it's one that's I've got to play. It's on my list. Hollow Knight, Axiom Verge.
Yeah, Axiom Verge is really, really good. Yeah.
Dead Cells is another one, isn't it? That was in
Dead Cells is really good as well. Yep. Something I finished that.
Hmm. I have played Metroid Fusion. I got that actually at launch with my Game Boy Advance.
Okay.
Which is the direct 2D sequel to Super Metroid.
Yeah.
And remember really enjoying it, but don't remember thinking this is in my pantheon of favourite games. So I'm looking forward to revisiting that. Actually, we're going to play that. That's the next Metroid game.
Mm.
So that's coming up in whenever 5 months is. May, I think. And then, but the bangers don't stop here on the community playthrough, because in January it's Metal Gear Solid, baby. We roll. What a game that is.
Yep.
And then Final Fantasy 3.
Oh God, and then, all those games. I really don't know where you find the time, mate.
I make it up. I don't sleep.
Okay.
I'm not as bad as Roushi, who seems to complete a game every day that takes 15 hours to play. The man's an absolute machine. There we go. So look forward to getting back into it. Looking forward to 2023 being the year of the game club's resurgence, with the two of us and Mark, and maybe some other special guests as well throughout the year. Maybe, you know, we get Andy and Jim involved and other members of the community. It'd be nice.
Yep.
Until then, mate, any shout-outs to close down what is going to be the final episode of Retro Sound for this year?
Just the usual shout-outs to the other guys and the people who joined us on the Christmas episode. Shout-out to Carl, actually, as well, from Video Game Newsroom Time Machine. I haven't been able to record with him for quite a while because of too much going on in my life right now, but I'm actually recording with him next week, so I'm looking forward to that. It's been a long time since I've been recording with him. And apart from that, I'm good, mate.
Steve still hates you, I think, by the way, Steve Erickson.
I think so, too. You've
just given him a shout-out, but I don't think it's going to help.
No. Really. Shout-out to Steve. I think he's a brilliant guy. Looks really, really good. He's very tall as well and strong, muscular. It's beautiful, beautiful people.
Do you know what's funny about this is we'll know actually whether he does listen to these Game Club Games episodes. Because if he does, he'll take umbrage at that.
Yes.
Shout out to me, the other guys. Such an honour again to be part of the 8-Bit Wars. It never gets old. I absolutely love it. Shout out to all the Discord members, all the listeners, particularly all the patrons. We know times are hard. We're so grateful to everything you do. Merry Christmas to everyone. To all the guys that play through, everyone who listens, it's been an absolute pleasure in 2022, and roll on. Next year, 2023. Merry Christmas, mate, and see you next time.
Merry Christmas. We'll be right back.